Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Joseph.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. It is the 27th of June, 2017. Again, I appeal to my listeners for assistance. Both my legal and tax debt are crushing. My house is being threatened. And this is what happens in divorce. For those of you who are considering it, my view is, unless bones are being broken, it's not worth it. There's nothing that's worth this kind of fallout. And my opinion further is that lawyers aren't necessary. There really is no secret trick that a lawyer, that your partner may hire that you can't counter. The fact is that no one knows your family better than you do. And I did quite well in the divorce proceedings, dragged out though they were, because I fired my lawyer. And once I did that, my ex and her legal team panicked. First of all, because I have a kind of a reputation, and because I know a lot of things they'd rather not have in public. I recall one of the hearings. I said, the judge asked me, did I want a continuance so I could secure a lawyer? And I said, thank you. No, Your Honor, my opponent doesn't require that kind of protection anymore. And so, you know, she's paying through the nose and I wasn't. However, I had to hire a lawyer for the custody issues. And then as this is going on, I'm putting all my living expenses on my credit cards. And then she gets me fired from Penn State. So it's a disaster. And if anyone is considering it, unless bones are being broken, please don't. So I ask my listeners to contribute to my existence fund. Some of you have been very generous. I ask anyone who's gotten something important from this show to give what you can. And for those who have, I thank you very much. My website is at rusjournal.org. And it's available right there in the description here at Radio Aryan. So I thank you for even considering it. It's very, very difficult for me to ask for money, coming from money. My father did very well in the funeral business, as some of you know, and he died broke. My mother took everything from him. So this is an ongoing situation here, and this is what divorce does to people. It destroys only families. It destroys lives, and it enriches a very parasitic class of lawyers who, as it turns out, I mean, I was more knowledgeable in the law than they were. I was uncovering cases they'd never heard of. And it's one of the reasons I fired my lawyer after quite a while. Actually, you know, I paid a small fortune to her. But there were two cases I had uncovered that were relevant, and she pretended that they weren't significant, you know, not knowing what they even were. I had a feeling that's what she was doing, you know, protecting her ego, and I found out later on that they were quite significant, and that no one had heard of them before. That they were very old cases, but very significant cases. Now, I did cite a case from 1622 that the divorce master there in Pennsylvania thought was a little excessive. But representing yourself, you know, I already spent, you know, way over five figures to this lawyer who I eventually fired. But representing myself was a freeing experience. I loved it. Hated the divorce, of course, and everything that went along with it. But, you know, they wouldn't get away with anything. I knew the lies. I knew the tricks. I knew her. I knew her friends. I knew her witnesses. There was no question. They weren't going to get away with anything. But with a lawyer, they would. Because a lawyer, I'm just one of many cases, and they only know, ultimately, at the end of the day, they know a few slogans about my life. But custody and other issues that came up at the time, I ended up spending about $35,000 on legal fees and other associated fees. I got what I wanted, but it was, you know, it's the most miserable experience that you can ever go through. And this was a no fault. You know, she sued me no fault, meaning that, you know, I hadn't done anything wrong, which a no-fault divorce is. You swear that in front of a judge. But even there, it's immensely complicated and difficult. And there's always third parties that make things far harder than they need to be. So it's because of all of this that I ask for your assistance, for all of this debt. And, you know, employment in my field is increasingly difficult because of who I am. I won't sanitize the message. I won't stop preaching the gospel. And therefore, I'm going to get into a lot of trouble. I was fired from Mount St. Mary's because I was the editor of the Barnes Review. I was fired elsewhere because, not the Penn State issue, but elsewhere because I had associated the Jews with Antichrist, the Khazars with Antichrist. And this is the nature of what we do, but I will not water this down for the sake of any kind of benefit. So again, to repeat, I ask, in fact, I beg your assistance. And this in this really very brutal time, it's been 3 years almost to the day, and it's very, very hard for me to do this. So I appreciate anything that you can do for me. And today, speaking of misinformation, I'm going to keep it simple. This is just going to be on Vladimir Putin. I am one of the most, if not the most, qualified individuals in the English-speaking world to talk about this man. My book, Russian Populist, is about his political theory, published in 2012. And that's before before Syria and everything, and the situation in eastern Ukraine. I do predict the situation in Ukraine, by the way, in that book, which I didn't even realize until fairly recently. But and there's a section on the Middle East in there that touches on some of this stuff. Now, there is a German edition of the book that has an additional chapter that brings it up to date. And when there is the Barnes Review is who published it, and they will, we'll add for a second edition, I'll add that extra chapter to bring it up to date. And there's no contradiction. You know, Putin has been identical in his political, very pragmatic approach to policy, you know, to political theory from the beginning. I know the last 5 to 7 years, nationalists have suddenly discovered Vladimir Putin. At the risk of sounding repetitious, this is because of me. I'm the one who, in 2001, discovered his ideological point of view, and only been president a fairly short time. And he had been referencing Charles de Gaulle and South Korea and the LDP in Japan as his ideological, basic ideological foundations here. And that is certainly not in line with liberal democracy, this New World Order demand. Right now, though, his ideological point of view and policies are being misrepresented or being lied about. We all know what Johnson's Law is. This is a law of social science I've discovered and named it after myself. When there's an area that's very obscure, and for Americans, including Russia experts, it's very obscure. It's much easier to lie and get away with it. It's much easier to simply be misinformed and not have anyone correct you. So those are two separate formulations of the same concept. You cannot trust anything in English on Putin right now. And I'm talking about the American. I'm not talking about RT and Sputnik. You have some good people there. But in general, you cannot trust the mainstream press on this. And now that the U.S. is on a war footing, the propaganda is kicked in, and the CIA is now involved in writing these stories. So it is you know, it gets worse every day. And the U.S. economy is heading towards a tailspin when the dollar is finally cut off from these commodity sales between Russia and China. The military alliance between those two countries is now very, very real. And they're on a daily basis engaged in military operations together. And so this is, you know, our situation, you know, for the American neocon super patriot is dire. The American military cannot face off against Putin's military. The suicide rate, the corruption, the fact that there is a massive manpower shortage. And so anybody and everybody is being promoted. Getting to be a colonel these days is not that big of a deal anymore outside of the Marine Corps and the Navy equivalent, of course, because of this manpower shortage. And with the largest military budget in the world by far, half of the Navy jets can't fly, and about a third of the Air Force jets can't fly. Where's this money going? As of now, desertion is at crisis levels, which is being kept out of the American press. It's at Civil War levels right now, because no one has any idea why they're going to die in a war, whether it be in Syria, Ukraine, or the Baltics, against an enemy that doesn't threaten them. But this is all clear enough. I'm almost daily fighting these people, these nationalists, who think that Putin is somehow a Zionist shill. And it takes a special kind of stupid to believe that nonsense. By now, if you haven't figured it out, then you're an idiot. What does this man have to do? He financed Saddam Hussein in Iraq. That by itself eliminates that. He financed both Assad's in Syria and continually supports, obviously, as you all know, the Syrian government. He has armed Hezbollah via Iran in Lebanon. He recognizes and assists Hamas in the same place. He was the main supporter of Gaddafi and is continuously, along with China, the main supporter of Iran. Destroying the most obnoxious level of the oligarchs in Russia was something that no Western leader can do. They simply don't have the freedom to turn on big money like that, but Putin did, given his background in security services rather than simply being a lawyer or something like that. What does this man have to do? It's absolutely absurd. The only thing I come up with these people is that you just can't believe that a real leader exists. We are so used to dealing with corruption and evil and sickness that when someone comes around who is actually doing the right thing and has been kicked out, clearly if Putin's been kicked out of the major meetings of the major powers, you don't know what to do. And you have the pseudo-intellectuals who will pretend that they know something about dialectics and say that Putin is the dialectical opposite of the New World Order. So now even being in opposition to the New World Order means you're a part of it by these people. By the way, that's not what Hegel meant by dialectics. You don't know what you're talking about. Shut up, please. Please, let the grown-ups handle this kind of thing. The U.S., the New World Order, is at war with Putin, and I've been saying this since 2003. The country is now literally surrounded with combat-ready troops aimed at him. Generally speaking, Zionist shills aren't treated that way. You know, I have to talk like these people are 5 years old. If anyone who believes this at this stage, and even going to the point of saying that even his opposition proves that he is a part of it, in this, you know, complete twisting of the dialectical idea, which, but you know, again, Hegel and Marx had nothing to do with each other. Marx was at war with Hegel. They had absolutely nothing in common. Feuerbach was Marx's main teacher. Hegel was really a foil for Marx, but absolutely nothing else. The whole point of his attacks on Hegel was to turn him entirely upside down. Hegel was a nationalist and an idealist and a syndicalist. All the ideas of the corporation and the syndicate come from Hegel and his philosophy of right, which I did my master's thesis on. Karl Marx is the precise and exact opposite, plus the fact that Hegel is a royalist as well. So, you know, he is the best of the right wing, so to speak, in the Western world. Unfortunately, he does it in such a way that only a handful of people can read it. You simply can't pick up Hegel and read him. That's just not possible. He writes in an incredibly, almost in code, and he has his own vocabulary. So you can't just pick up, you know, the philosophy of right and start page one. That's very pretentious, and you won't know what you're doing. He's impenetrable even to the best of us. You know, there are sections of the phenomenology of spirit that no one can penetrate. And the two-volume logic, which deals with dialectics, you know, two volumes, extremely difficult work. You don't know what dialectics is, that process. And it is not thesis, antithesis, and a synthesis. That is not what it means, and it's not what Hegel says. And he never uses that terminology in German or in English. But that's my only theory as far as these people are concerned. I predicted this in 2001, and I was all by myself. I was called every name in the book. I was called a communist. I was at the Barnes Review at the time. There were readers who wanted me fired because I was supporting the Soviet Union. And Willis Cardo finally came around to my point of view. And as did Michael Collins Piper, and then they spread it from there. And that's where this bandwagon comes from. I know I've said it before, but this is one of my big contributions to global politics these days, is now this alignment with the nationalist right and Putin. Don't forget, the first 5 years of his existence, the right was at war with him, saying that he was a communist and a KGB agent and all this sort of thing. And I knew better. Now, of course, back in 2001, Lebed was still alive, General Alexander Lebed, who I thought would play a much bigger role, and they killed him. There's no question that Putin is aware of that, and I think he's probably, at this stage, really impossible to get to. He has outsmarted the West, the New World Order, in every possible step. The Syria involvement is something that even I didn't see coming. It was a brilliant chess move. Here's what the Syria intervention did. I knew from day one that the West created and supported ISIS. It's such an obvious, ridiculous situation. I don't know how anyone can believe otherwise. You have to be an American journalist or professor to believe that nonsense. Putin, of course, had the intelligence behind it from his own intelligence agency. If he intervenes in Syria against this movement, which springs up from out of nowhere with an entire fleet of tankers, with numerous armored divisions, highly trained men, out of absolutely nowhere, with their own currency, their own printing press, you know, that no one ever heard of before. One day they exist as this all-powerful entity in the Middle East, as if that could even happen, given the CIA and Mossad are, you know, they monitor everybody in that part of the world. You know, they practice out in the open. They do their maneuvers out in the open, spy satellites. It's the most ridiculous thing to believe otherwise. When he intervenes, the West is now in trouble. They can't come out and say, oh, you're fighting our friends. Don't do that. Because they had spread the mythology that they were at war with ISIS. Well, of course, that's not true. But they couldn't, you know, they couldn't say that. They couldn't join Putin. That would be an admission that he is a leader in the war on terrorism. So they invented the concept of, I mean, essentially in the beginning, they simply condemned his attack on ISIS. They really did do that for a short time. And then they created that there's these groups out there, turned out to be Al-Qaeda, that now the U.S. is officially aligned with, the so-called moderate opposition, as if these people know anything about what these people believe on the ground over there. These lines of demarcation don't exist so neatly. And as you know, an American coward in an F-16 shot down a Syrian pilot in an army jet who was heading towards an ISIS unit, and the American coward shot him down. Now, I say coward because it was unsuspecting. This Syrian didn't know that he was doing anything problematic. I don't know what happened to the pilot, but and this is happening more and more, as you well know. The U.S. is at now, it wasn't that long ago, a few months ago, Assad had the civil war pretty much finished. When Aleppo fell, he was simply mopping up the rest of the country. And they were getting involved in rebuilding. The West simply couldn't handle that, and so they poured more money into and restarting the war in different parts of the country. So the evil of the New World Order, the evil of the American military, the American intelligence agencies, from the grunt all the way up to the general, and these millionaires, both in and out of uniform, is beyond description. And Putin has showed, again, has outmaneuvered them in every way. His record, as we all know, is very, very clear. In 1999, before he took over, the GDP was $195 billion, American dollars. In 2013, it was $2.1 trillion. Per person, it was $1,320 in 99. $14,800, almost $15,000 in 2013. Inflation was brought down to 6%. Debt was completely wiped out. As if you remember some of my writings in the past, they paid off their debt early. And the West was very upset by this. They didn't want them to do that. And there was a big problem with this. And they, you may remember when they demoted Russia's Moody and the Standard & Poor had cut the bond rating on Russia here. So here's the situation, and this shows you the level of information you're dealing with. Standard & Poor, right after Russia pays off all of their debt early, reduces their sovereign debt rating to BBB minus, which is, African level. And they say, well, sanctions on the country are the cause. Which, of course, is simply a self-fulfilling prophecy. And, of course, the fighting in Ukraine, both of which the West were a part of. So the New World Order, does something with one hand and another faction will bring down its bond rating with the other hand. And of course, this has nothing to do with the Russian government whatsoever. Well, the Moscow Times, which is Western-owned, I think the Washington Post owns it, that further downgrades would come. Of course, because it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Capital flight became a problem increasingly after the bond rating came in. And so then they came in and they said, "Oh, this is awful. You're going to go even lower than this." And they're at the same level as Mexico. But the problem is the downgrading of the bond rating, the debt rating, could be applied to any Western country. There's been no structural reforms in the United States. There's a massive decline in the working age population. Unemployment is extremely high. And what they complain about with Russia could be applied to any Western country. And let's get something straight here. I've said, I don't know if I've said this before or not. Russia is not dependent on oil. It is true that it is a majority of their foreign exchange earnings. In other words, their international trade surplus comes from oil. But it's only a generally it's only about 14% of GDP. Saudi Arabia is 42% of GDP. So Russia's dependency on oil is only 14% in terms of its economy, its gross domestic product, and yet Norway is at 22%, much higher. And Norway's exports are at 67%, based entirely on petroleum. So this may Russia is generally a self-sufficient economy. The one thing that it has in abundance that it can sell is oil. So of course it's going to be a heavy part of its export life, but that has nothing to do with the economy. A fairly small percentage. Depends on who you ask. It's between 9% and 15%, depending on the authority who's making this determination. Of the Russian economy is based on oil. It is not a dependency whatsoever. So Putin's record is there for all to see, and this is what makes him a problem. There's a lot of people who, you know, jumped on my bandwagon fairly late, and they have articles called "Why Does the West Hate Putin?" Well, essentially, without realizing it, they're simply, you know, copying from me, and it's very simple. It, at the most fundamental level, it proves yet again that the free market concept in the West is completely bankrupt. And for economy in Russia's position, the state and state control, but not ownership, over investment decisions has to be dominant. There's no getting out of it. This is what they did in Japan. This is what they did in South Korea. This is what they did in Taiwan. This is what they did in Russia with a strong executive power in every one of those countries. It's not an accident that Putin had modeled himself after after South Korea. So poverty in Russia, you know, from 99 to 2013, there were 42 million Russians under the international poverty line there. But in 2013, it was 15 million and falling. And of course, the informal markets are very important there. So we really don't know how many people are poor, but it's infinitely less. Than infinitely fewer people than it was in 1999. Don't forget, Russia almost ceased to exist as a sovereign nation in the 90s. Anyway, fast forward to this year. Just a few days ago, the Russians canceled talks with Americans over the Syrian situation, which is a very serious matter. They said there is no point in talking to the Americans. We know who they support. We know what they are. They're the temporary golem for the international banking cartel, those elites who control the entire planet. And this is one thing that Marxism and nationalism have in common, is that it's a complete financialization of the global elite. But Putin's central position, it's fundamental. His fundamental view is that no nation has the right to dictate terms to another. You can't determine the future of nations. The U.S. has no right to have anything to do with Syria whatsoever. I mean, at least places like Iraq and Iran, these are very close to Russia. They have absolutely nothing to do with the United States. This is merely to protect the investments and the future of major oil firms. Putin, as you know, has been accused, and this is really, it really has me shaking my head, the election outcome. You know, Putin's response to this was actually very profound, and I should have mentioned this before, but he says something that I've been saying for a very, very long time. He says, "I know a lot more about politics than you do. Politicians don't have a whole lot of power." Him, of course, accepted. He built the Russian bureaucracy. He built the modern Russian economy. But in the West, it's a different matter. Politicians don't have much power. It doesn't matter what the ideas of a politician, even a president like Donald Trump, who came in with the best of intentions. There are those, what some people are calling the so-called deep state, what I've been calling the regime for many years, will tell him what's going on. And this is how we do it here in Washington. And going against us will cost you, especially in the media. And Putin just very recently said this in public. And this is why the Russian government really doesn't care which politician won the election, because the people who make policy are a lot more powerful than Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Donald Trump simply doesn't have, the nationalists around the world don't have the institutional support to assist Donald Trump. He's all alone up there. The media assault on him has been inhuman, even worse than Watergate. But he's all alone. He has no institutional backing whatsoever. The Russians have been, for many centuries now, let alone now, have been the major force for peace in Europe. Remember, a strong president or a monarch generally has an interest in peace. They have an interest in social stability. Liberal democracy always seems to be screaming for war. This has been, before World War I, the Germans and the Russians, the monarchs, had no interest and no concern for war whatsoever, including including Franz Franz Joseph in Vienna. It was the parliaments, it was the elites that were demanding it. It was the media that was demanding it. These forces constantly need war. The Americans need war now because this depression that we're in, and it is a depression, is not going away. There is no way it can go away because there's no more credit that can be extended to people. It is an absolute disaster. And Putin has outplayed them, and he is not going to give away Russian energy, which was a strategy some years ago, trying to overthrow Putin many years ago, but it simply is not going to happen. You may have seen the latest Pew Research poll, a very extensive, it has a huge number of participants. 86% of Russians approve of his general policy approach as of June 2017. And this is at a rough time in the world economy. This has consistently been his numbers. He's very rarely gone under 70%. There's no Western politician who could claim that. Putin also, as he's condemning the ridiculous notion of how much power a politician has, he also says something else that I've been saying for a long time. The press will say something incredibly stupid. And because they all say it at the same time, everyone accepts it without debate. The Syrian poison gas thing is one of the most ridiculous pieces of nonsense. At all of these times, the two times that they've accused him of this, he was winning the war. In fact, the second time, he was mopping up. The U.S. was involved in removing all the chemical weapons from his country anyway, some years ago. He was winning the war. Why in heaven's name is he going to launch a chemical attack in Damascus, which is, a deep Assad area, as he's mopping up and ending the war, thereby ensuring American outrage and more American troops maybe even showing up on Syrian soil? It's a ridiculous thing. And yet professors and journalists without criticism were screaming this into their captive audiences at school or into microphones on television. And he says, and Putin says, what is wrong with you people? And he knows what's wrong with them, that the private interest dominates. The only way to understand public policy is to know what corporate capital, whether it be manufacturing, media especially, all kinds of services in that sector, and most importantly, finances, what their interests are. And energy, of course, would be under industry, heavy industry. Where is their interest? And that's what is going to happen. Donald Trump, whatever good intentions he had, is not knowledgeable in international affairs. That sets him apart from Richard Nixon. He is not at all knowledgeable. He has very little functional knowledge on that. He never claimed to really have. He is more of a symbol than anything else. He is aware, like everybody else, that the bureaucracy, the elites, those who've always run things, will continue to do so. Now, in attempting to take on the CIA, he's done something very wonderful. But this still hasn't fully played out yet. And again, he is there pretty much all by himself. But to accept this garbage, this hacker nonsense, or the poison gas crap, or that Putin is killing his political opponents with 90% approval rating and rigging elections with 90% approval rating, is something that is stated without debate and without consequence. It makes no factual sense, it makes no logical sense, and it certainly makes no political sense. And yet you have the greatest experts believing this. You have the greatest experts believing this. And I think some of you know this already, but you need to ignore the Snopes and all of these other debunking websites. They're all very, very partisan and very, very ignorant. Who are these people to decide what's true and what's false here? They have no particular expertise in any of these. They're highly politicized. They have no role whatsoever, except that the media will cite them now and again. They're absolute garbage. You know that Snopes is just two people in their cat who have no particular expertise or knowledge in any of these areas. Vladimir Putin has set up, to change gears here for a minute, something called the Civic Chamber. This is something that I should have been keeping up with. I'm actually registered there. It has 166 people. 83 are from the regional assemblies and are appointed by them. 43 are from NGOs. That is to say, Russian NGOs, and the remainder are appointed by the president. And they're from all over the place. Putin is so secure in power that he has appointed opponents in this position. Now, this doesn't have any overt coercive power, but it certainly has a lot of authority. As far as I know, the American press is not even talking about this. This is a very large institution. The Civic Chamber is meant to oversee the work of the legislature. People who are selected for these positions are expert in one field or another. They've proven themselves. Everything from military to music to culture to science to international affairs. And they're to oversee the work of the president, his administration, as well especially of the Duma. The United States, not for 2 seconds, would tolerate this. But he has set it up and has permitted his opponents. Now, with approval ratings of between 86 and 89%, according to the Pew poll, the margin of error, it's very, very difficult to be an opponent of Putin. Generally speaking, he just laughs at you. And as he's setting up this thing, and he's appointing his members, he's saying that I'm appointing some of my opponents here because honest men don't fear opposition. But they might fear the population, who is vehemently against anything Western and anything liberal. They have policy recommendations, they're of expert educations, they're to improve the work of the ministries and the committees, and they have no power, but they have authority, and they have resources, and therefore they're taken seriously. This has been a relatively new reform of Putin's that does not exist in the West and will not be tolerated. NGOs, we all know, the ridiculous distinction between state and society. That's a mystification. Society means corporate capital. NGOs like Amnesty International and the Human Rights Campaign, these are corporate creations. They're spokesmen for corporate interests. It's very easy to prove that. Go on their website, go to the donations page, and see their major corporate donors. They call them partner. And you see it's pretty much anyone who's anybody in American corporate life. That's all they are. Putin has clamped down on a lot of the foreign ones because they have no right to be operating in Russia anyway. He's clamped down on, if you remember, this time last year, the Protestant fundamentalists and the Masons were going on and on about he was going to ban Christianity. That was the headline in several Protestant newspapers. Because what he was doing is he was placing under surveillance a handful of Protestant groups who were receiving almost all their money from abroad and who had a specifically anti-Russian agenda. For the most part, it was aimed at Muslims who were receiving all their money from abroad and had seemed to have no local support at all, but they were there for agitation purposes. Certainly, that's within the rights of the president to protect his country this way. Corporate power, so-called soft power, is just as potent as guns and grenades. If guns and grenades can be controlled, then so can that. It's that simple. There is no abstract right of a free press, because the way it operates now, it's either state-owned, well, I should say not either, but state-owned, state-controlled to some extent or another. The so-called state-controlled press in Russia has a lot of opposition. The RT condemned the Crimean referendum, if you recall. So there's certainly opposition there. And Putin is not the tiniest bit frightened of it, given his approval ratings. The same thing goes for Lukashenko in Belarus. Or owned by a corporate conglomerate. There's no such thing as an independent press. In countries that have proportional representation, like France, parties are much more powerful, and they have their own media. That is actually a much better model than what you have. Russia has a hybrid version in terms of the election of the legislature. But they're not at the level, any of the party system never quite developed very well in Russia because the oligarchs simply using political parties for their own purpose. So there really isn't any support in the general population for factionalism. Putin is not a member of any party whatsoever, although his, you know, United Russia generally supports his agenda. Putin has made it very clear that the West has abandoned all dialogue with Russia and is at war. I began talking about the fundamental reasons as to why the West hate Putin, and I should finish that now. The Russian economy was rebuilt and went from a fourth world backwater to the eighth largest economy in the world in 5 years. I mean, if that doesn't, make you respect the man, then you're mentally ill. This is absolutely, unheard of. Park Chung-hee in South Korea, Adolf Hitler, after World War I, they came closest to this. Completely rebuilding a shattered economy and turning it into a global power in a very short period of time. He did it without the American advisors. He did it without the IMF. He did it. He did it without liberalism. He did it while rebuilding the state in the German sense of the term, the national culture and the national ideal. There is a bill moving forward to ban abortions, which absolutely needs to be done in Russia to increase the population of Slavs, which, as you know, have been disappearing for quite some time now. That's been reversed over the last decade or so. It's kind of old news now. Lukashenko had reversed it a long time ago. Putin reversed it, but it needs to go even further. And this is actually something taken very seriously. I mentioned before that the Russian banking system has been radically reformed thanks to Western sanctions. Putin has taken over the central bank of the Russian Federation. If that they were a Rothschild bank, they would not be in favor of the jumping of the dollar, which they are. So this is now his institution. And most of the local banks got over, and this has been going on for some time now. Over 400 local banks had their charters pulled. And in some cases, criminal cases opened. he simply refuses to be bullied by the West. When I say the West, I mean liberalism. Now, some of you may ask, and I remember Willis Carlyle asked me this a long time ago, how did you know in 2001? Well, no one else was saying this on the planet that I'm aware of, but he was going to be this fighter against the New World Order. And it has to do with his vocabulary. When a politician or a statesman like Putin uses certain words, he often doesn't use them in, you know, he's using them in a diplomatic. Diplomatic vocabulary is very different from our day-to-day vocabulary. There are some buzzwords that come up again and again that have very deep ideological meaning that most people ignore, don't understand, or misinterpret. One is terrorism. He talks about terrorism even before 9/11. He's referring to Western proxies operating in different parts of the world, the Mujahideen and Afghanistan and everything else. He's not necessarily talking about people who bomb apartment buildings. He's also talking about Western proxies all over the world, irregular forces that the West uses because it simply doesn't have the resources, the manpower to have an army everywhere. So the concept of terror is used in that sense, in very diplomatic kind of language. Multipolar is another word for decentralized nationalist, that nations will actually have sovereignty and power in the ideal system. Sovereignty is the war against globalization. He seems to idealize the United Nations and groups like the WTO. Understand the diplomatic language here. What he's saying is that he will find these institutions to use as leverage against the West, against corporate capital at every step of the way. If there's a weapon, he's going to use it. There is no great devotion of Russia to the United Nations, although they do have a veto. As you know, the neocons are trying to strip that from him, for the Russians. But it can serve a useful purpose. The facts are on Russia's side, especially with the buildup in Eastern Europe. There is simply no support for it anywhere. So a multilateral institution, it's a challenge to Western unilateralism. And the same thing goes for international law. Someone tells me that this is an illegal war somewhere. I said, illegal according to whom? International law. I said, I don't give a damn about international law. Who cares? That's a creation of the Western powers. That's meaningless. International law is meaningless. This is just victor's justice after World War II. Nevertheless, it can serve as a rhetorical weapon and can serve as a real weapon on the floor of the United Nations. Putin used that kind of vocabulary very early on in his career, and I interpreted it in the proper way. I knew he wasn't talking about that in a literal sense, and as his career has developed, this is what these words have come to mean, and it's been the core of his agenda. This claim that Russia is going to invade Europe is one of the most absurd. It's one of these stupid things. I have an article coming out in the American Free Press about this that is accepted by these grunt military jocks, these idiots, who truly believe that Russia is ready to come flying over the border and start a massive world war with a nuclear armed power. Like, that makes any sense whatsoever. Russia is just rebuilding from a serious recession caused by the Americans, caused by the American financial establishment. It is in no position to invade anybody. Russia has a population of about 160 million people. What is the population of Europe? To think that he's planning anything like this, the John McCain to the world would love a Russian invasion of the Baltics. World war would mean that the entire economy would be total war. The entire economy would be drafted into service. The nation could be unified or turned into a nation. But this isn't 1941 anymore. No one's going to tolerate state control over industry like it was in during World War II. And no one's going to tolerate draft. This isn't 1941 anymore. Putin says that there is no ideas for the future in the West. There can't be. whether it be academia, journalism, or in the economy, it is total intellectual stagnation. He talks about the regime as having no principle. One day it'll talk about international law, the next day it'll flaunt it. One day it will use the United Nations as a sacred institution, the next day they'll simply ignore it. There is no principle here. There's only the interest of corporate capital. There is no principles. Putin has said over and over again that they are arming terror cells. When I say terror, I'm talking about groups that attack civilian centers for the sake of delegitimizing a state. Usually they do that with warning. They don't just go in and start shooting people. Very few people are capable of that. Terror groups, it's often very hard to tell who's a terrorist is automatically a negative thing. You know, the fact that you can only have a guerrilla militia doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means you're not capable of fielding a regular army. But there are groups that the West finances for the sake of causing chaos. And one of the ways that the regime now is dealing with its internal decay to the point of collapse is inventing these threats, the ISIS threat or the Russia threat, banking on the fact that very few people know anything about it, and therefore they'll simply accept it. And Putin is very public about this. Putin has made, some of you realize, he has made the comment about the men in black suits who come and tell the politicians what to do. There's no one else who's talking like that on the global stage. Putin, one of the things he also looks at with absolute wonder is the refugee crisis. For the first time, refugees are this political football. How many wars have existed in the Middle East and North Africa over the last 200 years? And has there ever been this controlled flow of refugees from that area into Europe? When I say controlled, I mean guided and directed. Has this ever happened before? No. There's been wars all over North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, and the Middle East without this massive flood of people coming into Europe. That's never happened. Especially when they're all male and of, you know, essentially military age. Does this make any sense? How many journalists, real journalists in mainstream publications are even asking that question? Why has this never happened before? Why is it being clearly directed? And why, and Putin will ask the same question, why do nations tolerate this? And he says simply because there are foreign elements dominating the nation. The principle of nationality has disappeared. People are simply brainwashed into nominalism and liberalism and will accept anything. I have seen signs, protest signs, that say that we will take rapists before racists. Many of you have seen this. That rape by a non-white is okay if that non-white is from a place like Somalia or you know. And now they're calling them migrants because they're not even from Syria. Very few of them are from Syria, actually. It's a massive flood of non-whites to destroy what's left of the cultures of these areas, to have a reserve army to use in Europe. And I'd be happy to send you quote after quote after quote of Jewish intellectuals saying, yes, we are the ones who are doing this, and we're doing it to destroy what's left of white civilization. If you would like those, I'd be happy to furnish them for you. And those who don't believe that they have anything to do with this are going to have to either convert or just be dishonest and pretend they never saw it. And usually it's the latter. But, you know, we're at a state now where the economy is collapsing. When the dollar is dumped, there won't be an American economy anymore for very clear, obvious reasons. We're talking about a major collapse. There is no structural soundness. There is no rationality in the American economy. And so really even a minor push at this stage will push it over the edge, because there is no confidence in the system. There is no confidence in politicians. There's no confidence in the investing classes. The control over resources is so lopsided that no one trusts the system anymore. And there is no reason to believe that the American military, whether it be deployed at home or abroad, is going to simply take orders from these people consistently. We've seen the desertion. We've seen the pictures of these guys with the placard in front of their faces in military uniforms saying these are actually heroes. These are good guys. I despise the American military, but there's a few good ones in there who are saying, you know, this is not why I did this. This is a lie. This is all a lie. We're not dying for this. And as that spreads, I'm doing my best to spread it. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. And even, you know, high-ranking officers, as pampered as they are, will start questioning, why am I seeing body bags with no clear reason against a group of people in say, Russia or Iran who have never hurt the United States? Putin has said very recently that the regime, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, is primarily an economic phenomenon. What they care about is profit. What they care about is the power that derives from profit. And they don't care what they have to be or what they have to do, what language they have to use. And they, because they don't live in the societies that they are destroying, because they live in gated communities, they live in, you know, very, very, very wealthy areas in America are very hard to find. In places like Connecticut, they're very recessed. And they're often very difficult to find, the super big mansions and stuff like that. Maybe in places like Los Angeles, you could find them easy, but on the East Coast, they're very, very hard to find. They are recessed. They have fortresses, in some cases, underneath them. Some of you are quite aware. There's been several articles on this recently. They don't live in a society that's affected by this. The migrants won't come anywhere near their world. Putin is looking at a Western world that's gone insane. They believe what they know to be nonsense and will fight to the death for it. They'll accept these hostile, violent migrants and even accept rape and terror as a day-to-day part of life in Western cities. And they will not only defend them, but they will be violent in their defense of them. There is a demonic brainwashing here that comes at the late stages of the Iron Age, the decay of all reason. It's a moral age, and even in real age cases, you know, by the time, you know, their immune system is gone, they are insane. Not just sick, but they're insane as well. Oligarchy leads to terror. If there's one slogan to summarize Putin's career so far, it's that oligarchy, that is to say, the rule of society through money, by money, controlled by a handful of people and institutions, leads to terror. Because oligarchy can never expose itself. They can never go in public and say, yes, we're, you know, seven banks and we tell you what to do and what to believe. Maybe today they could and get away with it. But in general, they would rather not. They have to lie. They have to hide. And because of that, they use all manner of subterfuge. They'll create terror organizations. They'll create civil wars. They'll create media crises that don't exist. The Dylann Roof nonsense, the Pulse shootings, all this stuff. These things never happen. The stories don't make any sense. I did a whole show on the Pulse, the gay bar down in Florida. It never happened. It's very easy to show. Dylann Roof didn't shoot up that black church. It's a ridiculous thesis. Nothing makes sense about it if you read even more than two paragraphs of the story. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But this is what happens when you're an oligarchy. When you're an oligarchy, you become, as a social entity, you become mentally ill. You don't see reality anymore. Everything is understood in dollars and cents. Rockefellers look out into the world and they don't see the same objects as we do. They don't see the same things. They don't assign the emotional value to the things that we do. We aren't the same thing. We're barely the same species. We're not using even the same language. they mean very different things in the words that they use. That's what's at the root of this insanity. And Putin is the only major force and the leader, as you saw in Mount Athos. Now, the Russian Orthodox Church, the only thing I wish he would do is drop his concern with the World Council of Churches, which serves him, which is a Rockefeller elite organization that he's normally at war with, and yet he insists on leaving them, the one NGO he has no problem with in Russia, which is, you know, Patriarch Kirill's entire education has been in the World Council of Churches. But apart from that, he is the emperor. If he called an ecumenical council, I may even accept it, but the fact remains. The World Council of Churches has to go. Vladimir Putin is the hammer against a new world order. He's very easy to prove. He is a great hero. He is beloved of God. And we need to support him in every way possible. He is my president. He is the heroes of the last days. Thank God for him. Thank you. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.